Welcome to Self-Compassionate Professor, a career wellness podcast for mid-career and recovering academics who want more. More meaning, balance, rest, joy, and more clarity. Our motto here is no regrets. So glad you're here.
Hello. Hello, hello. Welcome. You are listening to episode 114, and I'm Danielle Delamar. We are going to be talking to Dr. Sarah Taylor today. She is brilliant. She is wise. She has all sorts of goodness to impart. So we'll get to that in a minute. In the meantime, though, let me ask you how you're doing. How are things unfolding now that you're done with the academic year? Are you breathing a little easier? I bet you are. And can we just take a second and maybe really think about how this academic year went for you, right? Like, take a second, let your eyes close. I mean, if you're not driving. And what are your major memories about this particular academic year? What are the parts of this year that were most difficult for you? And if this experience of this year had a shape and a color and a texture, what would it look like? Take a second and imagine that. And was it attached to you all semester? Or was it just like a friend that would show up when you went to campus or graded or something? Was it like carrying a 2-ton monster wherever you went? Could you leave it behind and go do some family functions, for example? Or was it always with you? What did this academic year feel like to you? Notice that. Notice the feelings when you think about the academic year. Notice the relationship you had to this experience. And notice whether or not it felt abusive or dysfunctional or light or joyful. And then what kind of a relationship do you want with next academic year? Do you want it to be like this one, or do you want something different? Can you envision something different? Like, if you really close your eyes and notice, what would a really good academic year feel like? Maybe there's a metaphor. What does it look like? Does it look like a sunny day at the beach? Does it look like something else? If you want to have a bigger conversation about this, if you want to unpack this a little bit more, if you want to improve your relationship to your work, come to the end of academic year detox. This retreat, as I've been mentioning on the podcast, is going to be on Friday, May 13th. So this coming Friday, right? And it starts at 9:15 a.m. Pacific time, 12:15 p.m. Eastern time. It's 4 hours long. This retreat is about turning into the reality of what is going on and intentionally choosing a reality that you actually want. Because let's face it, for most of us, the semester is like a whirlwind. We feel ungrounded. We feel overloaded. We feel desperate for space for ourselves, space to be creative, space to connect with other people. So that's what we're going to talk about at the retreat. Registration closes Wednesday, May 11th. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to selfcompassionateprofessor.com. Don't forget the .com. Go to Academic Year Detox and register there. And like I said last week, you can bring a friend. If you have an academic bestie, bring your bestie. Then you all can hold each other accountable when the retreat's over. Hold each other accountable for cultivating a healthier relationship to work. Because let's face it, if you don't correct the problem, right? If you are headed down the road of burnout, if you're headed down a road where you feel sick often over the course of a semester, you feel overwhelmed, you're in fight flight, and you're feeling that stuff regularly, it has an intense impact on your body, right? And you don't want to deal with that. And I'm sure many of you probably already are dealing with that. But let's not make it worse, right? Make the decision to change course. All right, so we are talking to Dr. Sarah Taylor in today's interview. I split her interview up into two different episodes. So the first episode will be today, the next episode will be next week. And the reason I did that is because she has so much wisdom to impart that I wanted people to have a chance to really process it. So in today's episode, Sarah's going to talk about her own experiences with trauma. She's going to talk about why she's so interested in trauma, right? And a lot of this, she's talking about little t trauma, right? Not like the big events that we think of when we think of trauma. And one of my favorite things that she says in this particular part of the interview is that the more inner work we do, the more we start to resolve some of these lifelong traumas and dysfunctions, although I don't think she would probably use some of this language that I'm using, but the more we turn into our stuff, right? The stuff that's keeping us from the life we want, the more energy we gain. And she said, the more creativity we gain and the better life gets, right? So you got to turn in and do the hard work so that all that tense trauma energy that you've been carrying around with you can release a bit. That was one of my favorite things that she talked about in this segment of the interview. And then there's all this connecting of the dots she talks about, right? When you can step back and look at your life and say, oh, that's how it fits in the puzzle. It's all so, so good, y'all. So good. And the way that relates to this podcast, right, is if you want to feel well in your career, if you want to feel stable and have energy and all that stuff, you got to start putting together your puzzle. Sarah's story is so messy and there's so many things that are going on and it's also slippery, but she's able, because of all the work she's done, to put it together coherently. So yeah, this episode and next week's episode, both with Sarah, should motivate you to start dialoguing with yourself, to start figuring out your triggers, to start asking questions and sort of poking behind the scenes and trying to figure out why you behave the way you do, why you get triggered the way you do. As Sarah talks about, it's hard work. It sucks at times, but man, it's worth it. So here is Dr. Sarah Taylor now.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining our conversation today. I am so excited to talk to Dr. Sarah Taylor, therapeutic life coach and shamanic practitioner. Sarah and I have been having all sorts of conversations about trauma and how it sort of emerges in your work life. So, yay. Sarah, this is just such a fascinating topic to me, and a lot of the stuff you do is just very much aligned with what I'm preaching. And so I just love that you're here to have sort of deeper conversations around a lot of the things I'm talking a lot about. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking to you. I feel like we could do like a four-hour podcast and still have space to go. So
I totally agree. I totally agree. So, So let's start here. We talked a couple months ago via Zoom, and after our conversation, maybe it was like a month and a half. It wasn't.
Who knows? But time doesn't exist anymore.
It totally doesn't. So you had said at that time, I'm going to be doing this retreat. And on this retreat, I might have some fun things that I've learned about myself. And so can we start there? What did you learn about yourself on that retreat?
Oh my gosh.
And what was it?
Well, so it was the end of a like 9-month training in family constellations, which is a way of working with generational trauma. And so like we spent the whole first part of it talking about our marriages and partnerships and how all of the like generational entanglements from the generations before us come through our partnerships and how it's really a miracle that anyone is partnered with anyone and that any children are ever born. So it was pretty intense. I left that feeling like, oh man, like, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Cause like everyone's coming into their marriages with all of this stuff with them. Right. And so for me, it's like we do personal work when we're at these trainings, at least in the first year of family constellations. And so I did a constellation, like I'm actually not like able to talk about the details yet. It was like my mentor and trainer called it the jackpot constellation, where like, you know, and you know, I bet a lot of people can relate to this, where you're like doing all this self-development work and like there's things that you're working on and you're just like, when in the world is this going to change? Like, I've just been working on it. I'm ready for it to shift. And so she said, there's lots of times where you do constellations and a constellation is its own thing. So we could talk about that in a little bit, but, there's times where you do the work and there's times where it like really kind of culminates. And so that was what I experienced. But I called it my ayahuasca constellation because it was like, and I've never done plant medicine. I'm like so sensitive to anything like even Advil. So it's not, but I've heard stories about people's experiences where it's like this huge, like, opening, but also very destabilizing. And so like I like went through an entire like reorganization of like all of the patterns that I hold and how I hold them and how open I am to others in my life. And so it was really interesting, and it was like all of the boundaries that I had put up boundaries may not be the best word, walls that I had put up like early on to protect myself, which had turned into like, you know, really great boundaries, but you know, maybe too much. They all came down. And so like, oh, I'm like super open now in a good way that I've been working towards. And so it was just like a reorienting to how do you do life now when you aren't holding on to those patterns that have been your protective patterns, right? And yes. So it was like relearning life. And so I went through a lot, like all of these experiences that I had been like holding off, like a ton of grief came through. It was just like days and days of grief. So there was a lot that happened. And so now I'm like, I feel squeaky clean. It's like a really big emotional, generational detox.
Okay. I love this. So, orienting to how you do life. What is so frustrating about that to me is that I'm a human and I want shit done now. Yeah. And so I'm like, I've been working on this. And I was just telling you before the recording, like my own trauma that's like resurfacing right now. Yeah. And I'm just becoming more and more conscious of it. And I'm like, but I've done so much work. Yes. And I work so hard to dig this stuff up and process it. And then the next layer shows up.
Yes.
And I know this is how it works. But you tell me, did you have that same feeling? Like, oh my God, here we go again. Another big reorientation.
Yes, I did. And it's funny because I had been working on like my intention around this work for about a year. And so there was a lot of things that I had worked on up toward it. And yes, that, you know, that has been my position until this experience where it's like, when am I allowed to cuss?
Yes, when, I just did.
When the fuck am I going to be done with this? Like, because, and like, I am somebody who, you know, when I go at something, I go at something, right? I don't think many academics or former academics aren't like that. You know, it's like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to take it to its end and I'm going to do it as efficiently as possible with the best methods. And then I'm going to train in them, right? Like, this has been my, you know, tour de force of healing since I was pregnant, you know, with my son, when everything sort of came through that needed to come through. And I'm like, yeah, when is this going to be done? But here's what happened after this experience is that I could zoom out and see the big picture. And that is, okay. So everything I have been doing has laid the foundation for the next step. And like, it didn't need to be that big because like what I had was like a big in the moment, I don't know, quote unquote healing. You know, I have weird feelings around that word. And okay. And it was a lot. Like lots of people want that. That's all they want. They want it to be like this huge moment and everything to be different. And I'm like, it almost like it was really hard. Like I was there with a bunch of body workers and like I needed support to get through that. Mm-hmm. And like, and I have a shit ton of skills, right? Like it's really intense. And so it has changed my perspective on like slow versus fast progress and this, you know, desire for it to be done already. And the question of like, has everything that I've done up until this point been wasted? And so I'm really coming back to this sort of, I don't know, motto, phrase. Okay. And that is, and it's inspired by the fact that we have vultures that roost all around us, but it's like, nothing is wasted. Absolutely nothing is wasted. You know, every bit of work that I had been doing was laying the foundation for some of these shifts that I just experienced. And here's the deal. They opened up a whole bunch of other things that are ready for me to look at. But the benefit is that I'm not in crisis, you know? It's like when you're in crisis, you need to get shit taken care of now because you can't function. And I'm not, that's not where I am. I'm like, I'm stable, I'm doing good. And so I can afford to, you know, have things come up and work on it. And I can do it from a place of curiosity. And it just takes the pressure away. Because for me, it's like, well, what else is there for me? Like what life force energy or what like goodness and like treasure, you know, treasure of the psyche is waiting for me on the other side of this? Like what bit of freedom that's going to help me move forward with what I want to do and make more of an impact and just have more enjoyment out of my life? What more is going to come from this? And so that's the perspective that I look at personal development and professional development, all of the developments, you know, is that it's like, it has become for me, like almost like a treasure hunt. Like I feel like half of my work is this sort of archaeologist of the psyche for myself and for my clients. And that just makes it really fun. And of course there's suffering along the way. And part of, you know, part of what I work with myself and clients on is like existential health, which is like being comfortable with death and suffering. And and from that comes so much peace and freedom. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, I don't even know if that answered know what my question was at this point, because that was just so, like, you hit me hard. I felt it all in my belly and chest. This, like, I don't know, it was like a truth. It just hit me as a huge truth. The what else is there for me? What freedom is waiting for me behind this thing? This archaeologist of the psyche, like, oh, yes, 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 right? Because I guess what I like about it, as I think through it now, is that it captures this sense of movement. Yes. I'm moving, even though, because so often we don't feel like we're moving. We're like, oh my God, I'm stuck here. When am I going to move? But we are moving.
Right, right. Yeah,
and that is such a relief.
Yeah, and I, you know, I seem to see it, like, if I'm picturing an image, it's like a spiral, and that spiral is either going up or down, but you're revisiting the same places each time. You're just going around in a circle, and it's like, and I don't want to get, you know, like, down is bad and up is good, and, you know, you can go into, like, spiritual bypassing a little bit there, but there is some thing where, like, you're growing, you're moving forward. So maybe if we turn the spiral on its side, it's like going back to the past and getting stuck in the past versus, you know, you're visiting the events from the past, but, like, each time you're gathering something new and taking it with you. And that gathering is just like, yeah, it's more energy for your life. It's more creativity, it's more pleasure, it's more, I don't know, context, where you just feel like, oh, I feel a little bit more clear about all of the stuff that has happened and how it is moving me forward, you know?
Yeah. For people that don't know what spiritual bypassing is, will you just define it quickly?
You know, I'm, like, the worst person to ask about this, because, like, in some levels, I'm like, if you want a spiritual bypass, you can. I think where I was going is, like, we can, there's talk of, like, high vibes only, or, you know, like, we're ascending to a new earth. Like, I, you know, I'm a shamanic practitioner, and I'm pretty grounded, you know, as a trained neuroscientist and former psychology professor. I'm kind of like, okay. You know, I come at this from a different, angle. And so, like, I can see, like, I do see that people are, like, having spiritual, you know, development, because I think having a soul is, like, absolutely essential to having a satisfied life. Like, I think acknowledging that, like, and I didn't used to, I was like 100% reductionist. You're just like a, you know, ejaculation of chemicals onto synapse that drives everything. And that led me to, like, to nowhere. And so coming back to having a soul, I think that there is something to say about spiritual development. And I think it goes hand in hand with personal development. And I just think you have to be careful, because some people are trying to leave this human experience.
Right.
And that's because it's painful, right? And so, like, I want to be clear that when I'm saying, you know, a spiral going up or a spiral going forward, it's not that, like, we're trying to escape this and become, you know, something where our heads are in the clouds and we're only thinking about things that have no relevance to our day-to-day life, which we have to live, you know? And so that's, I guess, it may not actually fall under the definition of spiritual bypassing, but that kind of practice can, where you're just like, okay, well, I'm just going to ignore all of this, like, practical stuff and suffering, because, you know, I can just, you know, dissociate in meditation and it'll be fine.
I'm on a spiritual journey. I'm better than all you
right.
are. Because I'm on a spiritual journey. You're just on some personal development thing.
Yeah.
But me, no.
Right. And there's value in that too, you know? So it's like, it's really pulling both of those together without, you know, getting haughty.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I hear you. So I don't know if this is a fair question. Can you just very briefly tell us what a shamanic practitioner is?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of argument about that in the shamanic circles. So I'll say that what it is for me is that there are techniques that I have learned that I learned by necessity in order to help myself and my son, and then clients as well, that just go beyond what is called like ordinary reality, right? And so it allows you, these techniques allow you to step into the unseen. And so that could be the energetic world, it can be the spirit world. And basically it's being a bridge to those worlds and providing the opportunity for movement to either spirit or energy through techniques that are passed down. And so the techniques that I use are primarily, it's called compassionate depossession, which I think is a scary name because it's not scary at all, but it's like compassionate spirit release, or, you know, it's like a sentient energy that stays with us that often can come as a result of trauma, as well as curse unraveling. And curses can be like curses that are, you know, from many, many hundreds of years ago that involve magic, you know, back when magic was a regular job. Or it can be like, don't ever be like your dad, kind of a curse that like happens in our families all the time. And so there's a shamanic way of working with that, but there's also like a generational way of working with it. You can work with these things through family constellations if you're aware of them as well. And so it doesn't have to be that way. And so, you know, but a lot of shamanic practitioners are spending more time with, you know, indigenous culture and indigenous training. And so mine has really been from the Norse lineage, you know, because I'm totally Caucasian. my family of origin is like English and Eastern European and, you know, maybe some Irish. So I have sought teachers that have come from, you know, sort of Northern Europe, that Norse Celtic sort of tradition. And so the techniques that they're using and that I have trained in have been really for me to assist with mental health and emotional health, and really just getting things out of the way that are impeding the rest of whatever development, growth, in my mind is just whatever you want. You know, you want something, and it may just be a feeling of being more free, right? And these kinds of things show up, and it's more often than I would have thought prior to having been trained in it, right? Although when you're trained in something, then you see it everywhere.
Okay, so I wonder if you have like a little example for us that just gives us a sense of like what this looked like for you during like maybe an early period when you were first starting to come to it. What was it that brought you to it? What kind of enlightenment did you experience or whatever? Oh, I don't know what the word is.
That brought me to shamanic practices?
Give a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is so funny that we're going here. Yeah. Okay. So, well, I'll tell you the reason why it is anything, because I didn't know. Like, I had heard the word shamanic and I was like, ooh, that sounds interesting. And so the way that I found it as a like adult me while still in academia was like on a trauma-informed education podcast where like they were talking about things and they just mentioned somebody who was a counselor and also really into shamanic, healing techniques. And so I was like, oh, what's that? And I just like put a pin in it. And then I was in life coach training and I think we trained at the same place. And one of the instructors, Sarah Seidelman, introduced herself. I don't remember, square three or something, you know, this is the creative section of the training. And she was like, and I'm a shamanic practitioner. And like, I didn't pay any attention to the rest of her lesson, whatever she was teaching us. I was on her website like, okay, so now I'm in contact with somebody who does this. What is this? And so like, she had these little ways to get started. And so I was like, you know, it was like something inside of me that made absolutely no sense was drawing me to it. And I was so, you know, I was on my way out of academia and on my way into, you know, this world of development and healing and whatever it is that we're doing. And so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to follow this. You know, we're talking about following our intuition. I just was like, this feels interesting. So I'm going to follow it. And so I ended up getting a session with her and having The experience wasn't that like life-changing until now. It took about three years or so for it to actually integrate. And that's the thing with shamanic healing is like, and why I use it in conjunction with coaching and, you know, therapeutic coaching, which just means like, I know a lot more about trauma than the average coach. Mm-hmm. And it really didn't have a full impact until other things had shifted. And so that it's not really a linear kind of healing. But the reason why I think that I went into the training is because in my 20s, when I was involved in a charismatic Christian church, I was having people pray for me because I had depression and headaches. And then we like agreed that there must have been some kind of demonic presence with me. And so I ended up having a very traumatic exorcism at the front of this church.
Wow.
Right. And so like, I had no idea what to do with that experience. I just kind of like tucked it away. And then later on, you know, this is in my, was I in college? I was like probably just starting college. And then after that experience, like my mental health really suffered even more. And I ended up like hospitalized. And so like, there's just a few years of my 20s that are basically kind of like, they were just shut down because I was like, I don't even know what to do with this, right? And so I ran back into these circles where I'm talking to shamanic practitioners, all of whom are like MDs or PhDs also, you know? So like, I'm sticking with people that feel safe because it's like territory that's like, oh, I don't know, you know, and it's like, this is indigenous and, you know, I don't want to be, you know, misappropriating or appropriating. And so, you know, it's like there's a lot of things to move through. But at some point, I met a practitioner and she was doing a training in compassionate depossession. And I was like, oh, you know, that would probably be really good for me to help me like rewrite that experience that I have, or just to help me understand what was going on. And so I took that training in part because it had been helpful for my son who had been having some issues at the time. And then in part because I was like, I want to understand what happened and like, you know, how does this go right? Because there was nothing compassionate about the experience that I had.
Okay. So as I'm hearing you talk, like I am just seeing all these pieces that have, that you've lived out in your life, right? Early 20s and, talking about sort of having your son and being an academic. And so when you said you left that Family Constellations workshop and you got sort of the jackpot,
yeah.
Then you can zoom out and see how all of that is connected,
yes.
Right? That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And what is, do you have like a foundational sort of mantra that goes with that? I know you said nothing is wasted, but is there anything else as you zoom out? What do you see?
Well, you know, this can be, you know, problematic for some people to accept, but like what I see in my life, so I can talk about my life, right? And that is like absolutely nothing that has happened in my life has been by accident. And even the experiences, like say this exorcism, you know, and I'm working through deeper levels of it now to really like understand it, and I'm looking at like what is a spiritual emergency and how does that intersect with mental health, but like I agreed to that, like a part of me agreed to that. Maybe it was a part of me that was super traumatized and just desperately wanted someone to rescue me, right? Which is not the best part to make your decisions for you. But like that part totally agreed to that experience. And it ended up, you know, being pretty traumatic. And I didn't realize how traumatic until I had my jackpot constellation and it threw me back into like re-experiencing it. And so it's just like, but nothing is by accident. And it's just like, it's so funny because like I was raised in the Christian church and then I left and went to science and science was my God for a while. and then like I'm coming back to this and it's like I really see like words are so tricky. Like I want to say design or like purpose. Like or function. I like function. Like there's a function for everything. And it's not just for me. It's also for like my family. And so in these family constellations, we talk about a family conscience. And that is like, it's like a field that tracks everything that's happening in the family and that like operates on certain sort of principles, but it's always working and pushing toward resolving things that are unresolved. And so it goes like my life story is really just a recapitulation of pieces of my lineage or of my ancestors' stories. And so the pieces that I hold are around tragic loss and mental illness. And so that is what has been tracking with me through my early life, my, you know, high school, college, and then even into my career and then my career change. It's like I can see how what I was working with my family to resolve has been like underlying the decisions that I've been making, and it's not conscious. And then as I look back, I'm like, oh my God, like the granularity of this and the specificity of some of the themes is just, it blows my mind.
Okay. So I'm loving this so much. And I guess one of the things I'm thinking about is what has always sort of been on my mind and in my heart, which is like academia pulls you in. It can pull you in because of some sort of trauma. And I had a friend who once said, yeah, my therapist said every time she talks to PhDs, she knows there's some big family of origin trauma, which cracked me up. But I don't know if I'm going down this. I don't know if this is fair. This is probably not fair at all. But there's something that I've always thought about, like what would motivate a person to go down this road that is so so hard in so many ways. And like, I just gave up my personal like health. Like I didn't pay attention to myself at all. Like to the point where I wasn't even showering regularly. Like I just had to read and write and, you know, get really red eyed and like walk around like a zombie and not be able to talk to people because all I did was, you know, academic stuff. And, like the thing I know that motivated me, and I guess I can use my own story rather than talking generally. That would be smart.
It's always safe, right?
way safer. So as I'm going through this, the reason I chose to do this was all about proving myself because I always saw myself as incompetent. That is by far my core, my core belief that motivates so much of what I do. I'm incompetent. I can't do it. I don't know how. And so I'm going to do this thing so I can prove to myself and everybody else that I can freaking do it. Right. Even though it was probably the most unhealthy thing I could have ever done for myself. That was my story. Yeah. Anyway, what are your thoughts?
I love that. And I love that. I mean, I don't love that that has been your experience, but I love that it's the exact opposite of mine because I think we all come in. I think there's one like pattern that gets us in. I think that it serves in many ways, which is why it's not just academia, you know, like institutions that can take advantage of you and your willingness to work tirelessly without, you know, fair compensation. I left, obviously, but there are two things that I feel like that like were the reasons why academia worked so well for me. And like, is definitely from my family of origin, like from early on. And I would say like at a soul level, you know, at birth, I said, oh, my parents are having a hard time. I'll take care of this. I'll handle it. Right. Like my dad came in with a ton of mental health issues. My mom had postpartum depression. And like my dad ended up on like disability later on. So like there was some significant stuff there. And I'm like, I come in, I'm like, oh, I got this. I can do it. And like, you can even take it to this place where it's not malicious, but like, I can do better, where I can see like they're holding a lot from their generational burdens, like from their families, which has to do with wars and mental illness and, you know, tragic early deaths. They're carrying too much. And I'm separated enough from it that I'm like, ah, I can do this. I'm game. I'm full of life. And so I took the I can do it better kind of route. So I didn't come from the I feel incompetent. I was like, oh, I've got this. I can be responsible for literally everything. And so it's not like they told me to, because some people will take that into the psychology, like parentification, which like you could call it that, where it's like, oh, well, I'll just take on these roles. But it was not like my parents told me I needed to. It was like, this was my choice. And it's taken a lot of work for me. You know, I'm saying this is my choice at a soul level from like the beginning of my life. So it's not really conscious, but like I can see it now. So I go in and like, I can do this. I can take care of everything. And I felt like school was a great place for me where I was like, it was really predictable. I was really good at it. I could take care of everything. I was responsible for my performance. If I worked hard, I could get A's, you know, and then of course we have to keep working harder and harder. And so then it became, look at me, aren't I great? And like I, you know, it was my drug of choice, which, you know, as things go, has, you know, a consequence of a PhD is not that bad, but right. You know, it's like, it could have been heroin. But like, I'm over here like, okay, great. I can do this, except that the whole time, if I'm not the best, or if I'm not holding the responsibility well enough, then it's like this internal silent panic, right? And it's like, the damage of the coping that I chose was, you know, all emotional and invisible, where it's like, okay, I'm going to hold everything together. And now I'm going to hold all of these things that I'm learning together. And I have to like integrate. And it's like, it's almost like I have to learn it all so I can put the whole world together in my mind.
And oh God, the pressure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And it's like, I don't know what, but I was like trying to figure something out. And for me, what I was trying to figure out, you know, it got more specific as I got older, was mental health and mental illness. Because like, my dad had a, you know, breakdown and was on disability. And I was like, well, this sucks. I wonder if I could figure this out. And so, you know, college, you know, I had hard times and dropped out of college and went back, which I always used to tell my students who were having hard times. I'm like, look, I got a PhD. I dropped out. It was all good. It's fine. You can go back. It's no big deal. No one gives a shit that I dropped out and came back.
Right.
So, but like this mental health, right? It helps some of the students to feel not so bad when they were struggling, for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. We need more of that, by the way. Yeah. Like, we need more of that.
I'm super excited to share the rest of Sarah's interview with you next week. But for now, if you want to check her out, go to her website at sarahbtaylor.com. It's Sarah without an H. So sarahbtaylor.com. In the meantime, I'm excited for you to hear the rest of her story next week. Have a great week, and we'll see you at the detox on Friday. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Self-Compassionate Professor. Find me on LinkedIn at Danielle Delamar. On Twitter and Instagram at Danielle SC Prof, or schedule a free coaching consult at selfcompassionateprofessor.com. Be well.